This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tommy's out. I'm in. Glad to be with you. Earlier, Mike Strain, the ag commissioner, told us he loves sweet potatoes in his crawfish boil, and it's become the topic of discussion. One person says, I've been doing sweet potatoes for years now, they text us. They are my absolute favorite extra in the boil. Somebody else says, sweet potato in crawfish boil is great. Carrots also. Several people text us, pineapple. That's along the same lines, the sweet and the spicy. Somebody else is taking issue with Joe Cardosi's yucking it. Says the man is willing to pull a crawfish in half, eat the tail, and suck the juice out of its head. But sweet potato in the boiling water is gross? Curious. We'll continue the conversation on the Okunor Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. But right now we have to shift topics. Heart disease has been the leading cause of death in the United States since 1950. And February is American Heart Month. Dr. Brent Wallace joins us now from People's Health to talk about heart disease and ways to lower your risk. Plus, he shares how heart attacks can look different in women. Morning, Dr. B.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing. You ever had a sweet potato in the crawfish boil?
I had some last weekend for the first time, and they were fantastic, actually.
Did you expect it to be fantastic?
I did not. I like the pineapple. That's one of my favorites.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to have to try the sweet potato. Now, I've never done that. We've done all kinds of crazy things in there. I've even done an entire turkey in crawfish boil for Thanksgiving one year, and it was a big hit. But I have not done sweet potato, so I'll have to try that. On the topic of heart disease, let's start with the basics. Tell us about the human heart.
Yeah, so the heart is really kind of the center of your circulatory system, and it's a, you know, it's a very strong muscle that actually moves all the blood through your body. It's going to carry all those oxygen and nutrients to every organ that you have. So it really is delivering all the fuel that you need to keep your body's system running in a very healthy way.
Yeah, no doubt. Obviously, the central part of our ability to, you know, the brain and the heart, without those two, we got nothing, right?
So exactly.
And for generations now, heart disease has been the leading cause of death. What is heart disease?
Yeah, so heart disease is kind of a general or an umbrella term that really describes a whole range of health conditions that can affect the heart itself, but they can also affect the arteries and your blood vessels. And when we talk about heart disease, the one most people think about is what is really called coronary artery disease. And the coronary arteries are the blood vessels that actually bring the blood to your heart muscle, so it fuels that muscle itself. And what can happen is plaque can build up on those coronary arteries. That causes them to narrow or even become blocked. And that's the process that makes it hard for that oxygen-rich blood to get through to the heart and enable it to keep pumping.
So that's where we hear about bypasses and stents and those kinds of things to keep that blood flowing to the heart. Also, we hear the term arrhythmia often. How does that factor into heart disease?
Yeah, so an arrhythmia, which is very common as well, is actually just an abnormal heartbeat. So it's an abnormal rhythm of the heart. And it could be that the heart is beating too fast, it could be beating too slow, or sometimes it may beat in an inconsistent way, maybe extra beats or some dropped beats. And a lot of arrhythmias are completely harmless, but there are some that can be very life-threatening. Another big problem that we see a lot is heart failure. And heart failure is really serious. That happens when the heart can't actually pump enough blood to support the body's needs. And it may be because the heart is either too weak or maybe too stiff. So it really has trouble getting the blood to where it needs to go to fuel all those vital organs like your liver, your kidneys, and especially your brain.
So what symptoms should we look for to know if we are having issues with any of these types of heart disease?
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows kind of a lot of the early warning signs. One of the most critical is either pain or pressure that you may feel in the center of your chest. You may feel a little fluttery feeling, like butterflies in your chest as well. That may be a sign of an arrhythmia. Some people may experience just really extreme tiredness or fatigue, and in particular, shortness of breath, maybe with some very minor activity, just walking up a few steps or maybe just walking across the yard. And then some people will develop swelling in their legs and feet, and that's a sign of the heart not being able to pump very well. So it's important to know what these symptoms are, but the one really important thing to keep in mind is the symptoms are going to vary by the type of heart disease you have. And sometimes an actual heart attack may be the first sign that anything is going wrong, and that's very true in women in particular.
And the symptoms for women can be different. So let's talk about that. Why is it so important that we address heart disease in women, which seems to be less emphasized historically throughout healthcare?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, heart disease is the leading cause of death for women in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that, but nearly half of women that are living in the States have some form of heart disease. Most have at least one risk factor for heart disease. And the American Heart Association actually estimates that less than half of those women even know that heart disease is their greatest health threat. They're actually thinking about other disease states.
Well, we see so much attention paid to breast cancer, for example, and so much fundraising associated with that and events and things like that. But we don't hear nearly as much about heart disease. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the past, heart disease was more kind of considered a man's disease, whatever that means. But, you know, researchers actually didn't even begin studying how heart disease affects women in particular until around the mid-1980s. And these kind of sex-specific symptoms that people can have and the differences that they have from men, those risk factors really aren't widely discussed for some reason. So, you know, an example would be the most common heart attack symptom for men and women is going to be that pressure or pain, kind of discomfort in the center of your chest. But for women, chest pain isn't always the most intense or even noticeable symptoms. And sometimes it's not even present at all.
All right. Well, I'm going to pause you there. When we come back, we'll talk about what symptoms women more commonly have that may be different than those that men have that we've heard about over the years, so they know if they have to take action to prevent heart disease, which you pointed out was the leading cause of death for all Americans, but even in women, and it somehow seems underemphasized. We'll continue the conversation with Dr. B after we check on WWL traffic. Heart disease kills over 700,000 Americans every year. That's about 20% of all deaths. Dr. Brent Wallace from People's Health is with us, and we were talking about how the symptoms are different in women. What should women look for to know if they're having issues that could be heart disease?
Yeah, we don't entirely understand the mechanism, but women are a lot more likely to have symptoms that may seem totally unrelated to the heart at all. And it may be something simple like a little extra tiredness or fatigue. In particular, women may develop what they think is indigestion or nausea, so stomach-type symptoms. And then it's not uncommon for women to not have any chest pain at all, but they may have pain in the center of their back or sometimes even in their neck or jaw area. And it's a lot more common, too, for women to have heart attacks when they're resting or maybe asleep. So those we call silent heart attacks, and they have no obvious symptoms at all. And we may actually find them when you come to see the doctor on something like a simple EKG. It may be weeks or even months after something happened.
So you just be sleeping, just relaxing, you have no heart pain at all, and you have a heart attack as a woman. It is baffling and something the medical community is still trying to figure out. Bottom line, though, what can we do since you don't have the symptoms the same in women and even in men? What can we all do to prevent heart disease?
Yeah, really, because of that, prevention is huge. And the American Heart Association really estimates that about 80% of heart disease can be prevented with something simple, just healthy lifestyle choices. And that includes things that everybody knows. You need to stop smoking, live completely smoke-free. That's one of the biggest risk factors. And then when you drink alcohol...
Does that include vaping?
The studies are still being done on vaping, and so they haven't made a definite tie yet. But I would not be surprised if they do link it as well.
All right. And beyond that, what can we do?
Yeah, drinking alcohol in moderation. So, you know, binge drinking in particular can be very dangerous for your health in general, but it's very bad for your heart. And then making sure that you're really practicing healthy forms of stress relief. You want to make sure that you're doing deep breathing exercises and not being super stressed all the time, because that increased stress increases your risk as well.
And, of course, we always know we should exercise more and eat better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, exercise, we always say 30 minutes most days of the week if you can. But, you know, don't be upset if you can't make it all the way through 30 minutes. You want to start slow and build up, you know, as much as you can. Even 5 minutes a day has a really healthy benefit on the heart as well. And then as far as the diet, which is really critical, you want to make sure you've got plenty of whole grains, lean proteins, and those fruits and vegetables. And everybody knows this too. Limit those foods in high salt, sugars, you know, trans and saturated fats, all the things we love, especially this time of year.
Everything that we're cramming down our gullets right now, yeah.
Yeah, so moderation. Moderation is really key.
Any final thoughts, Dr. B?
Yeah. Talk to your doctor about what your risk factors are. You know, they're definitely going to tell you to quit smoking if you're smoking right now, but they will also check your blood pressure, check your cholesterol levels. They can provide a lot of medications that can help prevention, but they're going to talk you through these healthy lifestyle choices. That's really what's going to make a difference in lowering your risk for heart disease.
Doc, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your carnival season. And you have convinced me now, and many others, joining in the chorus of people who love their sweet potatoes and their crawfish boil. So I'm going to have to add that to the menu.
I know. Enjoy it. Have a great Mardi Gras.
All right. You too. Talk to you soon. Dr. Brent Wallace from People's Health. We're back after the news. So there's this growing industry of devices, methods, and products to monitor worker activity to determine if people who work for you are actually working. And I think it's crazy. One person texts me, says, Dave, if you get paid an hourly wage, you should have to account for your hours. That is the difference between being an hourly and a salaried worker. Somebody else says it's not fair to the people who have to be at work that other people can work from home and they don't have to actually work all the time. Call it jealousy or whatever, but it's not right. Somebody else says, provide workers with a goal and a timeline. Turn them loose. Make sure they have what they need and wait for the results. Somebody else says, couldn't the same be said for office working? If my hours are 8 to 5, but I finish my work by 3, should I get to leave but still get paid till 5? I think so, yes. I have managed probably over 100 people in my career now. And I have always taken the approach, whether they were salaried or hourly, that as long as they get the work done. Now, radio is a little different. You know, someone jokingly texted, hey, I'll have that 5 a.m. traffic report to you by noon. No, obviously that doesn't work in radio. But the off-the-air stuff that people do and the other staff that don't work directly on the air, I have always been of the thought that, hey, if you want to get your work done late at night, if you want to get your work done before the sun comes up, if you want to take a long lunch or go to an appointment or go do something with the kids at school, as long as the work gets done, I don't care. Yes, I'll pay you to work till 5, but if you get it done and done well by 3, I don't have a problem paying you for those 2 extra hours, even if you're not actually at work. Somebody else texts us and says, my wife splits her week at home in the office. All she does is pack up the same laptop she uses at home and takes it to the office. She gets her work done whether she is in the office or not. And I get the argument that the movement towards everyone wanting to work remotely, everyone wanting to work from home, diminishes the team mentality in some workplaces, that you lose some of the togetherness and you lose some of the ability to have conversations and, brainstorming sessions and things like that. But again, that's all part of the productivity. If you feel like someone's not productive because they're isolating themselves from the rest of the team and they're not as much of a resource for you, or they're not as valuable to the team, well, then make a change. But if they are, I mean, this whole idea that we have to put in body heat sensors, motion sensors, and all of these other new things to determine if someone's actually working or not, judge them on their results. Wouldn't that make more sense? Let's check WWL traffic. Joe, you have to do the report now. You can't wait till later. So there's this growing industry of employee tracking tech so you can keep track of workers who are working remotely or in the office to make sure they're actually working when they're on the clock. And I just think it's crazy. I think it's a sign of poor management that they're not making. If workers are not working, you should know immediately without having to see if their mouse is moving, see if they're what time they're getting to work and leaving work, all these other things. You should be able to judge them based on, are the results there? I'm not saying that everyone should be able to work from home and should never be monitored or checked in on. What I am saying is that when you have to start using heat monitors, motion sensors, mouse monitors, other online tools to figure out if your employees are doing their job, then you as a boss are not doing your job to make sure that they are productive. One person texts and says, I work from home. It was great and productive for me. However, collaboration was very limited and new ideas slowly disappeared as communication directly with coworkers became limited. Well, then it's on your boss at that point to say, we need to find a way to get more communication amongst coworkers, whether that's coming back to the office, having regular meetings, doing some kind of online chats or whatever, to make sure that you don't lose that inter-worker communication and that ideas aren't limited, because they say it eventually hurt the speed of innovation and sales. I'm just saying spying on your workers is a sign of a bad boss. That was really my only point, and it took on a whole new life. And when we come back, we're going to talk to WWL Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak.